Good afternoon, Flashback Twin Cities. Tom Osmond on KLBB Club 1220. And good afternoon to you, Tom.
Good afternoon. Thank you. I appreciate it.
It's, you know, we're the second week two of the 1 p.m. slot, and learning that pre-production can happen in 5 minutes or less.
You know what? I find it a little more fun that way. A little adventurous, if you will.
It keeps you motivated. No more 1 hour prep time. Big week in America and abroad. Margaret Thatcher left us. Longtime political figure in England and here also. You know, with Ronald Reagan and whatnot. And also, I was on the internet last night, which I do occasionally. Saw a headline, and you might have saw this also. It said, Mork and Mindy star dies.
A little shocking.
A little shocking. I thought, really? Did Robin Williams or Pam Dauber? I mean, this can't be. No, Jonathan Winters dies. Mork and Mindy star dead at age 87. In case you didn't know, Jonathan Winters played Mirth, Mork's son, in like 5 episodes of Mork and Mindy. So to call him the star of Mork and Mindy might have been a stretch, and I think that got a lot of hits on the Comcast homepage last night. But just a little bit here on Jonathan Winters, who died Thursday at age 87 in his Monticello, California home, was a pioneer of the improvisational stand-up comedy with an exceptional gift for mimicry, a grab bag of eccentric personalities, and a bottomless reservoir of creative energy. Facial contortions, sound effects, tall tales, all could be summoned in a matter of seconds to get a laugh. Johnny Carson, in particular, lifted Winters' Maud Frickett character. Do you remember this? I think this appeared in Scooby-Doo also for us Generation Xers here who recall Jonathan Winters' memorable two-part episode in Scooby-Doo. Maud Frickett came out almost intact for a long-running Aunt Blabby. That was Carson's version of Maud Frickett, a character he portrayed on Tonight Show. Robin Williams introduced Winters to millions of new fans in 1981 as a son of the Williams goofball alien and his earthling wife in the final season of Mork and Mindy. Was looking for a good little blurb of Mirth, and looking through 22 episodes of Mork and Mindy was not part of the plan this week, but I did find a little promo of Robin Williams giving us a little teaser of what the year was going to be. And that's Robin Williams getting ready to tell us that.
Interesting.
Okay. Did the audio? Okay. Well, the audio didn't work. That's part of the magic of live radio.
Every now and again, that happens.
We'll go back to that later. Second big story: Mousketeer Annette Funicello, comfortable being herself. And again, much like Jonathan Winters was introduced to Generation Xers and alike as the lovable character Mirth, Annette Funicello was known to us as the lovable mom on the Skippy peanut butter commercials that she played from 1979 to 1987. Do we have the Annette Funicello audio ready? Let's play that.
That hiking makes you hungry, Alex.
I'll say.
Looks like you're really enjoying that Skippy peanut butter sandwich.
Tastes great.
Guess Mom packed it because Skippy's nutritious.
Nutritious?
Your mom knows, ounce for ounce, Skippy has more protein than a hot dog, chicken salad, even liverwurst. And Skippy has no cholesterol. What is it you like best about hiking?
Lunch.
For good nutrition, it's hard to beat Skippy and Skippy Old Fashioned.
I don't think it was that long ago that we went by the four food groups and liverwurst and hot dogs. We chose between that or a peanut butter sandwich.
Oh, I definitely remember my mom always telling me about the comparisons between peanut butter and liverwurst, which really cemented my love of peanut butter.
It's a constant conflict I have every night between the protein and peanut butter, and no cholesterol either. So
she looks pretty good in that ad.
She does look pretty good in that ad.
Not too shabby.
Unfortunately, so notwithstanding a smattering of guest spots on this episodic television and variety shows, and an appealing series of commercials for Skippy peanut butter, Annette in a casual motherly mode. Her career proper lasted only a decade after her 1960s beach bomb era. Her brand was not made to survive the culture wars of the late 60s and early 70s, and one guesses that her stardom did not matter enough for her to scramble to extend it. Annette was happy being herself. A lack of desperation that made her semi-retirement, finally, sealed by her advancing MS, seems gracious and grateful. Very unfortunate. Three major losses here in America and abroad this week.
I think, I watched a little bit of The Mouseketeers back when I was younger, Nick at Night, and I remember Annette Funicello. My dad would swoon every time she came on screen. Loved her to death, but I mostly remember her from, do you remember the movie with Big Kahuna?
Yes, I do.
Why, oh, why, oh, why, oh, did I ever leave Ohio?
Or the 1985 classic Back to the Beach.
That's the one. I think that's the one.
That's right. Which she, with Frankie Avalon, pokes fun at her Skippy peanut butter image. Teenage stars, especially those who come out of television, this is from the LA Times, or whose recording careers are presided over by professional hitmakers, are often unfairly described as manufactured. However many records they sell or live lives they enliven. In the 1990s, Disney's reborn Mickey Mouse Club produced Britney Spears, Justin Timberlake, and Christina Aguilera. So I guess those to show, every generation has their own Mouseketeer, Annette Funicello. Someday, maybe Britney Spears will do a series of Skippy peanut butter commercials, and we'll remember when she was, what, you know, those fond days of her being a pop star were.
I really feel like she's going to have a lot of work cut out before she becomes Skippy material.
We shall see. We'll see what the next culture revolution is. We have a great show today. I'm very looking forward to my good friend Lindsay Strand, formerly of KSDP and now of Lindsay Strand & Associates, and also photographer and also director of what's the correct title there, Chris?
Director of News Operations.
Director of News Operations of KSDP-TV, Chris Melvitt. We'll both be joining me live here. Let's go to a commercial break. We'll come back with both Lindsay and Chris live. Flashback Twin Cities, KLBB, Club 1220.
This evening in Detroit.
Fight over this controversial power line is a long way.
Are trained to handle emergencies and perform.
Limit the growth in spending in all programs to just 5.
That little movie that doesn't quite succeed, but it doesn't quite.
Enjoy this nice area, slightly cooler and drier air while we have it.
Channel 5, Eyewitness News, the news specialists.
Flashback Twin Cities, KLB, Club 1220. You are listening to the specialist, the news specialist of Eyewitness News, and we have one live in studio, Lindsay Strand. Good afternoon.
Hi, Tom. It's great to be here.
Wonderful to have you here. And I'm glad to hear that the growth in spending has been limited to 5% over the next 2-year biennium.
Exactly.
How things change and never do, right? So, Lindsay, you've been off the air now for, it's been a few years. What have you been up to? What have you not been up to?
Oh, well, what I'm doing now actually really grows out of my career in journalism. And I continued to find that after we moved here, we loved having our roots in the Twin Cities and decided that we wanted to remain here in the Twin Cities. Mm-hmm. And so out of that, I began a consulting career in helping to coach people on strategic communications and their own personal style, whether it's executives or leaders within organizations, mm-hmm. around crisis issues and also opportunities with all kinds of presentations. And then my husband is a full-time realtor. And
Mike Strand of WCCO-TV.
Yes. WCCO-TV. For our journalism career, we were always competitors.
Mm-hmm.
And now we've had the opportunity to work together in real estate. And so Team Strand, because we're together, is where people can go.
You can like it on Facebook, Team Strand.
TeamStrand.com,
right.
Exactly. And that's another face-to-face business. It's a people business. It's competitive like journalism, so it has a lot of those same roots.
Now, you're from Illinois originally, correct?
I am. That's
and
right.
And you worked at the Capitol in Springfield in Illinois for your early part of your career.
That's exactly right. So I had the opportunity to start at the Illinois State Capitol as a reporter, and then working in Illinois for a while. Funny to think about technology, because when we first started, we would be running over every day. We had the top floor of the big Hilton Hotel in town so that we could run up to the top before news time and microwave our stories back to the TV stations in Champaign and Peoria, and how the technology has changed over time. If the weather was bad, you couldn't get a very good signal, and sometimes you'd have to be early enough that if you had to drive the 90 miles, you could do it to get your story over to the station.
And to those listening who don't understand what microwaving means, this is satellite TV in its infamy, really. This is local, you know, local or state media, you know, sending signals across to stations and homes across the cornfield, as we talked about before the show started.
Exactly. So it's literally, you know, that was such leading edge technology. Mm-hmm. And I think people would wonder, well, what is it to microwave a story today? That doesn't even make sense. But
you know, and I want to talk a little bit about your days in Illinois and Channel 5, but I first met Lindsay. I had a tcmedianow.com is where you can find a lot of Lindsay's past work. Did a event at the Minnesota Historical Society called Your 6 O'Clock Friends, and hosted with Jack Stallman, who was here a couple weeks ago. And I didn't know who was going to come to this. I had a few guests I'd lined up, and I thought, well, we'll see. It was a cold February night. We'll see if anyone comes. Had a large – and Chris, you were there too?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Oh, that's fantastic. Yeah. Large group of former Channel 4, Channel 5, a couple current 11 reporters were there. Great people. And we had this questions and answers form at the end. And these people that I had seen as a younger person and have been seeing on my videos I post at tcmedianow.com, Lindsay here is telling some great stories of being a political reporter as a female in the early 80s and late 70s. Tell me a little bit about entering this world of in journalism, whether it be newspaper, you know, radio, TV. It was a boys' game. It was a good old boys' club.
Well, absolutely. And first, I just have to acknowledge, because we refer to each other as our husband and work wives, but you reference Chris, and Chris Melvitt was my photographer partner for all the years that I was here at KSDP, and you learn in that business that there's one person that really can make or break your reputation, and it's the person that will, you know, help to get you there on time, remember the facts that you might forget, and hopefully, you know, if the lining is out of your dress or something even worse than that's going on, your partner will tell you.
Well, you're very kind.
So Chris is joining us. He can jump in. But in Illinois, I was the first woman, and this was in the 70s, the late 70s, based at the Illinois State Capitol in what was called the TV room, where the reporters from Chicago and downstate would come together all in one room. They didn't have their own private offices. And in that space, the file cabinets were all filled with pornography.
Right, right.
And their big gesture, and this was particularly to keep entertained the Chicago photographers while they were waiting for a story to break so they could sit back there and read that. And then, in fact, their big concession to me was to go out and buy a magazine of men.
Oh.
And they cut out then all of the body parts so that I wouldn't really see anything, so, and gave that to me.
Fair and balanced new entertainment room then, I guess, for everyone. We've got to make sure we have our equal pornography. My guest here, Lindsay Strand.
That should be a tagline.
Yeah, this is good. This is going to be the promo next week. So, and just to point this out, in Illinois, you look at Chicago. Chicago is not all of Illinois. Chicago, which progressive, diverse city, Illinois, outside Illinois, this is back in the 70s, farmers, and maybe not the most accepting, at least at this point. It had not had a lot of women reporters, not a lot of women politicians, for that matter.
Well, isn't that interesting that at that time, the biggest issue in the Illinois State Capitol was ratification of the Equal Rights Amendment. Mm-hmm. Illinois was the most northern state that had failed to ratify the Equal Rights Amendment. And the little green button that I had posted on the wall there, 59 cents, you know, was women made 59 cents out of every dollar. I think it's gone up now. I know we're into the 70s, and it might be into the 80s, and frankly, in the last 10 or 15 years, I think in business, it's probably in many places been a lot easier to be a woman than a man, frankly. Chris might have some other ideas about that. I don't know, but so interesting times for sure.
And you hold a master's degree in public affairs from the University of Illinois and a BA from Washington University, St. Louis. Did you go into journalism wanting to cover politics?
Well, I actually first went into politics and didn't like representing one person's viewpoint. I worked in Washington, D.C. for a senator from Illinois, and Chuck Percy, who is a Republican and chair of the Foreign Relations Committee. But I didn't like representing one person's viewpoint. And that's really then what led me to journalism, where you could make a difference, you could be involved, you could feel that you were really sharing information for people to make their own decisions.
See, I find today in journalism, it's usually the opposite direction. Usually reporters go into one point of view after leaving journalism. But that trend is
certainly out there.
Took the opposite route. So you came to KSDP in 1982?
1981.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And were you assigned to the political beat right away?
I think that was the intention. But Marcia Fleur, who's been just a fabulous, had a fabulous career Marcia was covering that beat, but the intent was for her to move into some anchor positions, and so they were looking for a backup. Mm-hmm. And so we worked together for a while, and I first started covering the city of St. Paul.
That's great. And Chris was your photographer this whole
Well, and I actually was Marcia's photographer for years at the Capitol as well. So, yeah, in the beginning there was a little bit of just kind of taking Lindsay around and showing her where things were. There's a lot of trying to just figure out where the conference rooms are and meeting a few people and the like.
When I started at KSTP, we had a kind of a newsroom mom, Harriet Sundet, who was there made that presentation. And so when you came as a reporter, you got two things when you checked in, a yellow ashtray and a Rolodex. And I got Lou Harvin's Rolodex.
Both were essentials.
And those were the essentials. Yep. And so there was no thought about if smoking, I mean, I'm sorry to say that, but if smoking was good or bad, it just was.
It was part of the job.
And so those were the two things that you got when you checked in. And then if you were lucky, you got to be able to pair up with somebody, as I did with Chris. And, you know, thinking about the technology with us having that microwave on the top of the studio, and and Chris really helped to pioneer so much of what happened with the technology, with the Newstar equipment, and being able to really see what are the capabilities, you know, of what became then CONUS and now is in the museum in Washington, D.C.
Have you been to the museum? Truck. It's a great place. If you have not been to the museum, I recommend going out there. And they do have the original CONUS truck in the museum on the, I think it's on the first floor. I think you go down there.
Very prominent, I guess.
But the very first truck,
as I like to point out, before there was CONUS, there was KSTP-TV.
And that's right.
KSTP was the one that actually
Newstar 5
developed the technology, had the engineers, had the backing of the Hubbard family, and
a lot of, you know, I've talked to people on here before, and the Hubbards are not in the Museum of Broadcasting because they had a TV station. They're in the Museum of Broadcasting because they've did such, you know, risky at the time, innovative technology.
Very much so.
Sending the satellite into space to create what is today commonplace DSS satellite equipment. Mm-hmm. I mean, they were called crazy. I have many news articles on tcmedianow.com you can read of the local scribes criticizing Hubbard for focusing their energy on all this technology, which is now pretty commonplace. When you drive down even here in Stillwater or anywhere else, there's these satellite dishes hanging out of people's bedrooms.
It is really a hallmark of journalism in Minnesota, the leading foresight of the Hubbard family and the commitment to that technology.
Let's take a little clip here. I have, this is Lindsay Strand covering politics in 1982. We had an election that we didn't have a recount on. This is one of the rare times we actually had elections that were decided election day. This is 1982.
Well, the governor-elect of Minnesota, Rudy Perfect, set up shop back at the state capitol today, and he got right down to business. In fact, his staff at the transition office is at work right at this instant.
Oh, yeah.
And to bring us up to date on what's happening, we're going to go live now to our government specialist, Lindsay Strand, at the state capitol. Lindsay?
Well, Stan, Rudy Perpich had promised he would waste no time in preparing to take over state government, and if today is any indication, he is going to live up to that promise. Since he entered the Capitol at 10 o'clock this morning, Perpich has been in numerous meetings, starting first with Governor Al Quie.
The newly elected governor was all smiles as he headed into his old office with Governor Al Quie. The two met privately for about an hour to discuss the transition, while across the hall, the lieutenant governors were doing the same thing. Quie and Perpich emerged from their meeting to say the state's continuing money problems dominated the discussion. Quie said he expects a new revenue forecast due out in 2 weeks to contradict earlier predictions that the state's economy would start to improve toward the end of this year.
I don't see it out there. We don't have any figures on.
Lindsay's friend reporting live at the Capitol in 1982. You have a great story. I want to go on air. You
well, here's what we were just looking at each other and remembering when he was first elected and we were up on the Iron Range and Rudy had said that he was going to take the doors off at the Capitol and have
every
it be very
be
open.
Yeah.
Every meeting would be open. There was something about he'd made a promise that he was going to run around in his bare feet if he won, and it was we had 12 inches of snow or something at the time. But Chris, pick up the story. So he said he's going to take off the doors. Every meeting will be open.
Well, and there was some meeting that we were invited to with some commissioner, and we had no idea what he was going to be talking to him about. But as I'm in there filming this poor guy, we suddenly realized he was being told he no longer had a job. So it was very open in the beginning, and suddenly I felt very uncomfortable about being there while this poor guy was being told he wasn't going to have a job anymore.
That story ran, and there were no doors taken off at the state capitol by the time we got back down here.
You know, this is an interesting time in history because we've had a couple decades in Minnesota where we didn't have a budget crisis, but this period when you came to Minnesota, it was budget crisis every 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
And you look at the budgets that we were working on, those are peanuts compared to what we're dealing with today. But you had shifting parties. You had one party that was in the executive branch and legislative branch that was split. Same thing we've experienced the last decade, really. So, you know, to the point, it just never changes.
Well, and you know, it's interesting, having over time now observed how people choose to move on after their career in an elected office. You know, Governor Kui really left with a lot of people ridiculing because the state was in such a period of financial crisis and the leadership didn't appear to be that strong. He certainly is an example of a person who has proven himself to be such a remarkable statesman in his time since he was in elected office. The commitment he has to things that he does privately that people don't even know about, counseling and working with the inmates and the Stillwater prisons, for example. Quite a statesman.
Well, in 30 years in Congress before he was governor, and he's been a great, even you know, former Governor Pawlenty, you know, has called him out as being a great mentor as he, you know, when before he came to office, and he's not been afraid to voice his opinion, even though it has not been always popular with his party brethren, if you call it. And he's, I saw a picture of him actually recently. He's still riding horses. I think he's almost 90 years old.
That's
he's
right.
Still, he's still riding horses. And no, I've met him. I met him recently, actually. Great, great guy. We were talking a little about you have a picture here, and I want you to tell me a little bit about this.
Well, I just got such a kick out of this because we're looking at a photograph that was one of the promotional things for the news specialist, one of the marketing strategies for KSTP. And when we start out in each of the pictures. And Cindy Brucato and I are the only two women, but in each of the pictures I have on some manifestation of a tie.
That's right.
And so it could be a little ribbon. I mean, it was bold to make it a tie that had a little brighter color to it, but basically we are kind of covered up everything short of a comforter. And today we've gone through such an incredible evolution. Part of it, I think, is a point where women are more comfortable with what they can wear and really looking at their old style. But it used to be, you know, you kind of cut your hair, you covered up, you didn't wear anything that would be distracting or flashy jewelry, to now my mother says it looks like they're all going to a cocktail party. Interesting research I saw recently here out of the University of Indiana University, co-authoring a study on, well, what does this all mean? You know, there's women are not wearing blazers. Now they're all sleeveless, which I think is the new uniform. And they did a study that said that when women today are wearing bold makeup and clingy clothes, the less likely the male viewers are to remember the news, but they do watch. And that the
interesting.
Yes, they had a 24-year-old anchor read the same news broadcast dressed in two different outfits and evaluate then. The women did retain more of the content from the, you know, than the men did. But it's interesting to see.
Study. So it seems liberating, but it's also kind of a smokescreen, maybe?
Well, it's interesting because I do think we have a point now where you can dress to what would be most attractive for you. But there does clearly, certainly at the national level, seem to be more of a push of, you know, the brighter it is, the tighter it is. And I think, of course, Michelle Obama really did, with her sleeveless clothes, 365 days out of the year, create a new news uniform.
I didn't agree. I'm looking at
only you would bring Michelle Obama looking at as a style.
At this photograph here, and you're wearing, you have two ties. You have a tie on in the, and we're going to work on getting this on tcmedianow.com, but we have a picture of you in the tie on the front picture here, and then on the bottom picture, you're wearing a tie again. So you must have had a tie collection that would rival my own, unless I have to wear one every day. This is great. As a woman reporter, and I don't want to focus on the gender part of reporting, but it is very fascinating. Did you find that some politicians or some subjects that you're covering, did you feel a different attitude when you were asking them questions? You're asking tough questions. You're not doing softball interviews.
Absolutely.
And it was like, who are you to ask me? What are you?
for me, I figured out pretty quickly it was actually an advantage because there weren't a lot of women. And, you know, if that would help you to get further attention, further access, a little more interest within the bounds of what's appropriate, very appropriate.
Well, that gets you back to wearing the ties, doesn't it? I mean, didn't the ties give you some access? That...
Here I am with a scarf on today.
I want to play a clip, and this is from Bob Madsen. And
oh.
Actually, we're not going
to... That's the one I believe that did not work.
Oh, I think that is...
That was number two.
Number two on the... number two. We're doing a little production here on the air here. Number two on the CD did not work?
Nope.
Okay. Then let's play number four here. You went to Honduras, and I believe both people in
the
stream
did. Went
yes,
to Honduras.
We both were there.
And one thing I I'm going to make Chris uncomfortable now because I'm going to bring up something about today's era of news. Local people don't take a lot of international trips any longer, from what I've seen. And I sometimes watch, if I go to the, I watch four different TVs one time if I'm at a fitness center or whatnot and kind of see where people are at. You went to Honduras. There was a lot of controversy going on in Honduras with the American military doing some testing there.
What
or some,
was the American we, military doing? Building those roads, right?
And you both went to Honduras. I want to play the audio here. This is very. This is from 1986.
The terrain is rugged, the region remote, and the reason for the road unclear. The road begins in a small town called Yoro and winds through sparsely populated areas. The project is the largest U.S. military training exercise in Honduras.
I'm getting a lot more done than I've ever done before, because we've never done nothing like this up in Wisconsin.
By the end of the dry season, 100 Minnesotans from the Army Reserve and the National Guard will have joined thousands of others from the Midwest to build this road in central Honduras.
The base camp is 120 miles away from the Nicaraguan border where the fighting is taking place. And as you can see, there are several mountain ranges between here and the Nicaraguan border.
Although far from the conflict, the work goes on under tight security provided by U.S. military and Honduran police.
What are you guarding against here?
Any terrorist action against any foreign or American persons.
Have you had any problems at all?
Not that I know of.
The military says the road is helping the local Hondurans. We saw few natives traveling the road during our visit. But with the help of an army interpreter, this man told us he was happy the road is being built near his home.
Before the road was built, they had to go by mule and horses on the countryside, so now they're able to go on the road.
By next year, the road is scheduled to connect the towns of Yoro.
That's a bold question there. What are you building? What are you doing here?
Who are you protecting?
Has it worked?
I was just thinking about, with Chris, how technology has changed. You know, when you're moving through something like that and trying to be flexible and fluid and move quickly and every... I mean, I would haul the tripod, but really, you hauled everything.
Well, and you were saying that the local stations aren't traveling internationally, and I don't know that I would agree with that. Just KSTP was embedded with the 101st Airborne during the Iraq War. One of the big differences is this was a story we went over, we filmed for several days, videotaped, brought it all back, wrote it, had some time to edit it. With the 101st Airborne, we had satellite phones we were doing live from the battlefield every day.
I have to admit, if I love traveling, but if I was in the newsroom and said, "Hey, Honduras, I have a ticket for you," I might be a little bit skeptical. What was your thought when they said, "Hey, we have a ticket for you to go to Honduras"?
Go, right?
Yeah, no, I mean there was no question about that.
No fear, no reservation whatsoever.
It was a very
to Honduras. Oh no,
it was a wonderful opportunity. Now, as it turned out, I did get very sick there and didn't figure it out for several months and then realized that and had a miscarriage and a lot of other things going on as a result of that. But no, it was just a matter of go. But gosh, that's another thing to think about. I actually, we talked about, I do not smoke now and I haven't for years, but that Persian Gulf War, when it was that first time that you could see a war live taking place on your television.
1991, right.
Do you know what? I started smoking again at that time. Watching that got me so unwound. And then I did quit again. But, not a smoker today, but I...
We don't judge here either way.
That the way that technology has changed our lives and how we receive information is just remarkable.
Chris, I'm going to ask this question to you. Do you find now, take 30 years ago, in the early days of KSTP, when you were both there, you were really the media was controlled through, you know, four different channels. And I say controlled, meaning we had competition, but there's four different sources. The cameras were not consumer grade. You couldn't afford to buy a camera with the same kind of quality. You had a film camera at best, a Super 8 camera with 3 minutes. Now we have people right now. I watch, you know, CNN, Fox, you take your pick. And a lot of the coverage they use, the footage they use, it's all from citizen journalists, or exactly, if you want to use that term. How is that make your job challenging now as a operator of a, we'll call it, a legitimate established news organization, with all these people equipped with a high definition camera, cell phone in their pocket, doing what you were, you know, paid a salary to do 30 years ago?
Well, it's not only that, it's just the number of people that will be out at the scene of some story. Even the several of the local stations, professional cameras look like amateur cameras. They're very small.
Mm-hmm.
And so you get to the scene of something, and the police may not know whether you are, in quotations, a legitimate journalist or just some citizen who happens to show up with a camera. And it puts additional stress under you to be able to mm-hmm. cover the story when you're competing with, you know, a dozen people who are all running around with cameras. It may be an iPhone. It may be, mm-hmm. it might be something else. But it's, you were touching on it in the beginning, that there were four TV stations, and that's who our competition was.
Mm-hmm.
That's the number of eyeballs were divided amongst those four stations.
Right.
And now those eyeballs are divided amongst the four or five stations, but 1,000 other outlets for information. And
instant information. I think that yes. We're a very impatient society now. We need to have it now. Mm-hmm. And I had Mike Binkley on last week, and we were talking about trying to go back to the days. Picture you go to shoot a story on film, and you remember these days. You go back to the lab, and then you're trying to develop film. We wouldn't have the patience for that right now. I mean, when someone, you know, we had three big deaths this week. You have an event going on in town. That story needs to be on the KSTP website or the Star Tribune website in 30 seconds, or you lose your legitimacy as a news organization.
Well, I was thinking about this, and exactly as you're saying, one of the things that, and it seemed a little silly at the time, but back, this had to be the early 70s, Mr. Hubbard Sr., S.E. Hubbard, mm-hmm. was all about finding ways to get our film on the air as quickly as possible. And he went out to National Camera, bought every photographer, and there were only a dozen of us, Polaroid cameras.
Mm-hmm.
And our instructions were film the scene of whatever it was, and grab a Polaroid, because you could get that Polaroid back and you could get it on the air before anybody else. And so even then, they were looking for ways.
Blue chroma key and a slide in the back. I like when you did that. You found the slide image and you put down the blue chroma key. I have another trip that you took, Lindsay, in 1984. This is the Dallas GOP convention.
We're together.
Oh, yeah.
And
it was hot in Dallas.
Lindsay Strand and Chris Melvitt. Let's take a trip back to 1984, a very hot July day.
Out with an Eyewitness News team. Stan?
Okay, Cindy, here we go again. Well, the Republican delegates are just about getting ready. It'll happen officially tomorrow night to nominate the Reagan-Bush ticket. But already, the Minnesota delegation has become something of the unofficial cheerleader for a rising GOP star in 1988. So let us go over live now to the convention floor here in the arena to our government specialist, Lindsay Strand, with more on that story. Lindsay.
Talking about. They are already zeroing in on just who should be the party's presidential nominee in 1988. And the conservative color of the Minnesota delegation is showing once again. 76% of the delegates responding to our Eyewitness News survey said they would like to see New York Congressman Jack Kemp heading the ticket next time around.
Since the convention began, the Kemp and 88 campaign has essentially been operating out of the Minnesota delegation. Bon Clayton of Chanhassen brought 1,500 buttons to Dallas for all the convention delegates. Button business has been brisk.
He appeals to the blue-collar voters, to the broad-range conservative, to the Westerner, and to the Southerner. That's the kind of coalition that Reagan has put together, and I think we have to try hard to continue that.
Minnesota delegates are enthusiastic about the New York congressman who helped to shape President Reagan's tax cut plan and now is carrying the conservative banner for the party.
Jack Kemp is the closest thing we've got to Ronald Reagan. And that's what I'm looking for.
these stand-ups are on tcmedianow.com, and it's pitch black, and you and Stan are both out there. And you're not wearing sleeveless anything. You're wearing the wool suit with tie. It couldn't have been too comfortable.
Well, you know, all kinds of things come to my mind there. One is technology is not perfect, and so you certainly have to learn how to go with the flow. You can hear Stan there saying, "What happened?" And there's the dead air, and you're just always in that ready position because you're not quite sure.
I'm glad he kept his composure.
What might happen next. But that was one of those early exciting times to figure out, well, how far can the signal really carry? You know, and can we go to San Francisco? Can we go to Dallas and make it work? And that was the beauty of a lot of the travel. And interestingly enough, I've often thought that that some of those Tea Party seeds that we've seen, they really were being seeded and nurtured here in Minnesota as early as 1984.
I find it funny that there's a clip, it's on tcmedianow.com, that Arne Carlson was too conservative for Minnesota in 1983. And oh my, how the decades have changed on us here. Let's take a quick break, and we'll be back with Lindy Sprand and Chris Melvitt, both of former KSGP and current KSGP on Flashback Twin Cities, KLBB Club 1220. Flashback Twin Cities, Tom Osmond on KLB Club 1220. With me, Lindsay Strand and Chris Melvitt, the husband and wife team. Well, not quite husband and wife team. This is
we just spend much time together that
in
we
quotations.
Just... He left me a message last night and said, yep, this is... Or you posted it and said, my work wife. I'll be on tomorrow with my work wife.
Yeah. I think we got to, you know... When Stephen Sharon, you know, you guys should have hosted for A Week of Good Company. I know you did. You could have brought Chris on. You could have been your...
Oh, dear. That would have been quite a show.
Could have done some cooking or something for us. No, this is great. I want to play a commercial, and this is one of your favorite commercials of all time. And this is from 1984, from the We're the Team series. I played it many times on this this show, but we'll play it again.
When Minnesota's news team gets together, it doesn't matter what they do. They go at it with the same kind of energy and enthusiasm that's in their news.
We're in it all the way together. We're in it every day together. We can't wait to show you. We're the team.
So even when they're just having a good time, they do it with style. Not because they have to, because it's the only way they know.
We can't wait to show you.
For some people, the satisfaction has to come from within. They know that playing hard is the other side of working hard.
Yeah, fun.
Come to the Eyewitness News Team.
Can't wait to show you.
At 5, 6, and the updated 10.
We're the team.
The news specialists on Channel 5.
We're the team.
Well, the voiceover in that commercial sure went on to bigger and better things.
We recognize that.
Made a name for himself, yeah.
There was another one, and I don't know, Chris might have some insight on this too, but there was another one at the baseball, and that one was memorable for me just because I was pregnant at the time, and they put us into twins uniforms, but they were KSDP uniforms, and a seven-month pregnant woman with her pants and my shirt, they told me to tuck my shirt into my pants there.
Oh,
and,
there we are.
Pretty awkward, but being one of the very first women in this market, Cindy, of course, as an anchor, you know, was a real leader here.
And
we had our
children.
Marsha Floor, too.
Yep. About the same time. And so it was interesting to see, well, so are you going to show your stomach or not? And how's it's like, yeah.
This is like the I Love Lucy dilemma here. Do I just say the word pregnant and do I show
Good
my
point.
Stomach?
Excellent point.
Exactly.
I always heard, go with in the family way.
That's right. The stork is coming. You pulled a Diane Sawyer clip. Looks like I want you to give a comment on that. I saw you pulled that up, and I'm curious to know what.
Well, you know, that was just in really looking at over a period of time, talking about what's happening here with women in clothes, and in this case, it was just a piece where actually it was Nora O'Donnell This is an article that was recently in the Washington Post, and it was Nora O'Donnell who was talking about from the CBS this morning. She went to go buy a new outfit, and she thought really she should have, you know, kind of the suit with not the padded shoulders, but the suit, and really couldn't find one anymore because they're just they really aren't sold.
And that's
a
shame.
I don't know, what a woman wearing today in the newsroom, Chris? And you would be so, he's so great, he probably wouldn't even notice the difference between what the women are wearing, what the men are wearing, but what are the trends in fashion and news today?
Well, if you brought me here to reflect on women's fashion trends, you really grabbed the wrong person. But it reflects with the fashions of the times, just like the padded shoulders and the neckties of the 80s. Yeah.
So, Lindsay, you take these trips, you do this reporting, you do we'll call it the grunt reporting at the Capitol all year round, and they let you go to the inauguration in January of 1985. You're actually at the Capitol on a very cold Capitol. This is one of the record-breaking coldest inaugurations in history.
Do you remember that?
Oh, my God, that was cold. Just like Dallas was hot.
Let's play a clip of this.
For the second time in 2 days, President Reagan took the oath of office. Yesterday, it was a small, semi-private ceremony. Today, it was a festive, colorful ceremony for the public, which included some Minnesotans. However, it wasn't nearly as grand as the planners had hoped. Lindsay Strand standing by live in Washington via our exclusive News Star 5. Lindsay, good evening.
Cindy, good evening once again from a very chilly Washington, D.C., if you can believe it. Everything, as you have learned by now, really was out of kilter here in Washington, D.C., but that is not the thing that had any kind of an impact on people here today or put a damper. The big question from the Minnesotans is, what has happened with that tragedy? They're very concerned about that. They have a lot of questions, and that is really the thing that has impacted what is happening here. But as you say, the president has now been sworn in twice in the last 2 days, and still most Minnesotans who came here didn't get a chance to witness what they hope to see. Hundreds of Minnesotans crammed into a House hearing room to do what they've been doing a lot of lately, watching TV.
Well, go for a statement. That's what I'll say. When you look at that picture, I've got on the most fabulous fur hat.
Just to give the listeners who have not seen, Lindsay is wearing Alaska Fur's best hat and fur coat.
It was inaugural worthy at the time.
You know, very inaugural worthy. And there was a news anchor here in town that got a lot of heat recently for wearing a fur hat. I mean, we're talking like hundreds of.
I now have a politically correct fake fur coat.
Oh, good.
That was a gift at a fundraiser that I helped to start.
Wearing fur
has
not done well in Minneapolis. We seem to have a few challenges with that over the years, people wearing fur.
And I'm not sure that there's still agreement in the world on in journalism. We know this well. We had a news director from Florida, and the first thing he said was, you cannot wear a hat outside because it'll cover up your hair. It'll mess up your hair. And it's like, are you kidding me? It's, you know, 30 below zero.
Yes.
Which now, may I ask which director this was?
Bob Jordan would be happy to tell that story, I'm sure.
But it swings both ways. Now if you're outside and it's 10 below and you don't have a hat, you look foolish. And so then the news director is calling you saying, why are you not wearing a hat?
We might bring our hats this weekend yet if it keeps snowing. my guest, Lindsay Strand and Chris Melvitt. Lindsay, so I'm asking you the toughest question I'm going to ask you today. It's 1989, and you have a great job at Channel 5. Why do you leave? Why do you leave all this?
Oh, do you know what? It was absolutely wonderful, but we became rooted here. And I realized as I met people in town that if you had a child in Minnesota, you would never leave the state. And in 1984, after Mondale's election, my husband and I looked at each other and we said, do we try for a child or a network job? And we went for a child, and we are so blessed. We have two great children. And so once we had one, we thought, well, we're rooted here. And so the best way to really kind of weave into those family years and not try to chase a job where I'd never be home was to start consulting. And it's been a wonderful journey. And I have a daughter who is director of editorial content for a public affairs firm here in town and kind of followed in those footsteps, and couldn't be more pleased that now I have a little grandbaby here in town too.
How old?
A year and a half.
Wow. And do people still recognize you when you go to lunch or you go somewhere, people say, didn't you used to be Lindsay Strand?
It's a little vaguer now. It's something like, did I used to go to school with you, or
Where do I know you from?
Didn't you used to be somebody important?
Right. Well.
I think that really boils it down. Chris, thanks for that candid assessment. I'm just hearing
this story now, by the way, Jeff, because I always thought it was something that I said to you that drove you out of broadcasting. So now I don't feel
so bad. I was trying to get that out of her, and we didn't we didn't get that far. No, and by the way, and thank you for the great videotape that it's the more people...
Couldn't you have made me look a little better in some of those, Chris?
I worked very hard.
I know you did.
That's trouble now. See, in the online world, your work is critiqued over and over again. You had one shot. It was on live. You thought it was never going to come back again, and now we have it for the ages. And once it goes digital, you don't escape it. Real quick, what in your years of reporting, what was the best story you ever did? We played a few of them today. What was the best one that if you wanted to put this story on your resume of KSDP, what is that one remarkable story?
Oh, gosh. I don't know that I can think of one story, but here's what I really do want to say about this community. I mean, my husband had been a student of journalism, and the Twin Cities had the reputation of the place to come to where people were information hungry and open to new ideas and having that interest. And I'd have to say that is a hallmark of this community that served me very well in my years. And so it's not one thing, but mm-hmm. I think people should, appreciate that's one of those things that sets Minnesota apart.
I don't think this website would work in other markets. I think that here in Minneapolis, we take our news very seriously. We're quick to call them out when they've not done right, and we're also quick to praise them when we've had some fantastic journalistic work here on 4, 5, 11, in the last few years 9 since they've become some more money in their budgets, some great quality here. I mean, I think Dave Moore did a lot. Did a lot of work for journalism here that he'll never get the credit he deserves for that. Mm-hmm. And with the Hubbard family doing great things in news gathering,
it's remarkable. And that continues forward today in so many ways. I think now Channel 9 News, I mean, they started a format maybe last year where they were putting the little bullets on the side of what's coming up next. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I mean, you're starting to see that not only at other local stations, but at stations, nationally. I mean, we do set trends. The technology that continues to be leading edge coming out of Hubbard Broadcasting is remarkable.
Well, we can't fear technology, but we have to coexist with it. And I think that since the beginning of time here in, big beginning of the media era, radio is going to die. How many times in the last 70 years is mm-hmm. it going to be dead?
Any day now.
TV is going to be dead. The movies will be dead. The movie palaces are going to be dead. The video store will be dead. Well, that kind of did die, but we have Redbox now, which kind of replaced it. These media formats are going to coexist, and they're going to survive. I think that even though online penetration is very high, the TV is still going to be something you flip on when you come home. And it's very low maintenance to turn that on and watch what's going on. And I think that people still expect a product from TV, and it's going to be there.
And building community, which I think is, however it happens now, if it happens in different forms of technology, that's fine too. But building community and not just getting everybody to think what you already believe, but to have common engagement where you mm-hmm. can build a stronger community, because that's how you build a stronger community.
And I think we have to get the other half of Team Stranded here next time. I think we need to get Mike in here next time.
Oh, that would give you a different perspective.
We might.
Yes, that would be very good.
I want to thank my guests, Lindy Strand and Chris Melvitt. Thank you both for coming in today.
This has been great.
Next week, we will have Dan Henry again from the Broadcast Museum in St. Louis Park, the Paddock Museum. This is Flashback Twin Cities. I am Tom Osmond, tcmedianow.com, and we'll be back next week. So long.